Hello and welcome to Model 3 of the session Becoming a Visio 2013 Power User. Just to keep in mind that to understand everything that Scott and me will try to cover during this session, you should watch Model number 1. So, Scott, you mentioned that you love the containers and lists. And you know, for me, it's like a dark forest. I use it a couple times, mm-hmm. but for very simple things. So yep. What exactly do you mean that when you say that you love them?
Okay. I was attracted immediately, and when Visio 10 introduced the idea of containers and lists, I was attracted immediately to the idea. Part of it is probably because it aligns very nicely with some of my OCD tendencies. I want structure, I want things to be organized and fit together in certain ways. And that's really what structured diagrams in Visio and what containers and lists help enable. That's really what it's all about. The idea behind containers and lists is to let you build that structure, build additional structure into your diagram. So let's take a look at the agenda slide. I'll show you the three main things we want to walk through in this third and final module of this session. We're going to go into a little bit more detail about what containers and lists are. And just like the other two modules, it's mostly demonstration, not slideware. I've got real things to show you. I'll actually show you how lists and containers interact with other shapes on a Visio drawing page. Then we'll look at where containers and lists exist in Visio itself. Many of the templates that come with Visio 2013 do use structured diagram elements, specifically containers and lists. And then finally, we'll look at what it takes to build your own. And this is where some of the real wizardry comes in, because you will find that the built-in containers work nicely, but you'll also find that there are no built-in lists that you can just take and use for yourself. You have to be able to create your own. So we'll do that. We'll get there. Let's start with the beginning. Let's start with a little bit of a better idea about containers and lists. Now, as I started to say, the idea behind containers and lists is to allow me to add structure to a diagram, to make relationships more evident. And so part of what's nice about a container or a list is not only does it visually enhance a selected set of shapes, but it lets those shapes work together, and both the list and container structure know what's contained within them, and objects inside a container or list know where they're contained. So keep that in the back of your mind as we look at some of what I want to show you next. Let's launch Visio, and get this out of the way here, and we will launch Visio, and I'm going to open a sample diagram that happens to have a good application for containers and lists. Here's a network diagram. Now, in a network, there are different parts of a network that are related to each other. In this case, it's fairly obvious. On the left side, you see branch office 1. So there are some PCs, a printer, some things that are part of this local area network in branch office 1. We have a router in the middle, and we have branch office 2. So you get some sense that the things in branch office 1 are all related to each other because they're connected to the same fat pipe. But what I would typically like to do in a network diagram is make that relationship even more evident. What we used to do in the past is something like this. We would typically take the rectangle drawing tool, and we would draw a rectangle that's a little bit bigger than that set of stuff that we want to show is related to each other, or show that those elements are related to each other. But of course, when you add a shape to a Visio diagram, it always ends up on top of any existing shapes. So now it's obliterated my network. So I need to right-click and send this shape to back, which, by the way, is now in a different position. It used to be on the drop-down menu, the right-click menu, but it's now right on the mini toolbar. So you notice I can bring to front or send to back using the buttons on the mini toolbar here. So I've done that. I would probably want to make that a little bit different color than the shapes inside that rectangle. Now, so far, I've got a rectangle and I've got some shapes. What if I want to move that collection of stuff? Well, I'm going to grab the rectangle, and guess what? The rectangle moves by itself because it has no relationship to those other shapes other than the location on the page. Control Z to undo. So what we typically would do in days gone by is we would now draw a bounding box around that whole collection of stuff, the rectangle I've just created plus all the shapes within it, and then I would right-click and choose Group and create a group. So far, so good. Now, at least if I move the rectangle, everything goes with it. But this concept of grouping, while valuable, has some drawbacks too. What if I want to find out about that particular printer that happens to be in the upper right corner of this network? Well, if I click on the printer, the group gets highlighted. They'll notice the whole orange rectangle, whole orange square lit up. If I click a second time, then I get the printer and we see its shape data. So interacting with shapes inside a group is an extra click or two away. If I want to resize this group, but let's try that. Actually, rather than just say it, let me try it. So I want to take this, I want to make it bigger. So I want to make the rectangle bigger. But guess what? When shapes are in a group, they inherit the size from the group itself. So when I stretch the group, the shapes got stretched too. And that's probably not what I had in mind in a case like this. Once again, Control Z is my best friend.
And I assume that you cannot add a new stencil or anything new, any new shapes to the group, right?
A perfect question, because, yeah, let's talk about that. Because now if I take a PC and I drop it on top of that group, it looks like it's part of the group, right? And, yeah, well, let's try moving the group and see what happens. Guess what? The group moves, that PC does not, because it is not part of the group. Now, there is actually a setting in Visio. I can change an attribute of that group so that shapes I drop on it become part of the group, but that's not the default behavior, so most people don't know where to find that. What if I want to delete a shape that's in the group? Well, as I said before, I have to click once to select the group, and then I click a second time on the printer, and then I can delete the printer. It doesn't affect anything else. The printer's gone. If I delete the group, let's click once on the group and delete the group, everything's gone that was part of that group. So this worked in days gone by when we had no alternative, but now let's look at what a container can do for us. I'm going to select the things in branch office network number 2, and I'm going to go to the Insert tab where we find a gallery of containers. When I click the container button, here's a whole gallery, and notice these all have live preview, so you can see on the screen before I commit to which one I want exactly what each of these groups each of these containers is going to look like. So let's take that one. That's fairly basic. Let's contrast the behavior now. What if I want to resize this? Well, I'm going to click to select the group, and I'm going to drag down. Hey, look at that. The container expands, but the shapes do not. So there's a containment relationship that is completely different for these objects that are in a container. They don't inherit things from the group as the group did. What about the business of getting at the printer? Well, let's do that. If I click on the printer, lo and behold, the printer is selected. In a sense, the container is invisible for mouse clicks. If I want to actually select the container, I have to be very specific. I have to click on the edge of the container itself in order to select the container. Once I do that, I can do things like move the container. Everything moves with it. Control Z to undo. As we've already seen, I can resize it. No problems there. I can stretch it in all different ways, and it does not affect the contained shapes. What about this business of adding things? Well, let's grab that PC from the stencil. Watch what happens when I get close. Notice that the container has a green border around it. Now, it's a little bit hard to tell. In fact, let me do this, only because the border of my container is green. Let me point out that a special tab appeared because I've clicked on the container. Notice it's gone now. It's back when the container's there. This is one of those tool tabs or contextual tabs that we referred to in Module 1. On the Format tab for containers, I can change the container type. So, yeah, let's do that. Sure, it's orange. Got an orange border, kind of a little style to it. Now, when I drag the PC near it, orange lines surround the container. That's visible evidence to me that something's different here. This object is about to become a member of this container. And when I drop it, let's prove that. Let's drag the container and move it. And sure enough, that new PC went with it. If I delete an object from within the container, great, no problem. If I delete the container and its contents go away. Sometimes that's exactly what I want. But what if that's not what you want? What if you just wanted to remove the container but leave the contents? Let's go back. I'm going to undo. So let's go back to where we were just a click or two ago. If I select the container, one of the other buttons on the Container Tools tab is a button that says Disband Container. And by the way, this is also available with a right click on the container boundary. So let's disband the container. Sure enough, the container goes away, the contents remain behind. I'm going to undo and bring it back one more time. So you can see that working with contained shapes is much more natural in a very real sense. I can add things, I can remove things, I get visual evidence as I'm doing those things. It behaves more like the way I think you want it to behave than that grouping mechanism we looked at on the left side of the page. So there's some value there. There are some other aspects of containers that I'll point out, others that I'll leave to explore on your own. And this last thing has to do with applying a label or text. Over on the left here, if I click that group, and maybe this is the Seattle branch of this company, so I'm going to type Seattle and then click on the background of the page. And let's zoom in and see, you know, it looks like that's there. Yeah, sure enough, it says Seattle right there just above branch office 1. But the problem is the default behavior of a group is when you type on it, any text that you type appears right in the center of that group, which is what happened here. And it happens to be that it's obscured by shapes that are within that container. Within that group. I need to be more careful about my terminology here. The right side of the page, let's look at the container and let's do the same thing. Select it. And this time it'll be my hometown, Boston. And I type Boston. Containers have built-in headers. So now when I click back on the page, you'll see that it says Boston right at the top center. This particular style of container puts the heading in that particular location. If I go back to my container format tab and pick a different style of container, notice now Boston is in the upper left corner, or Boston is in the upper left with this sort of wavy, stylized appearance, or maybe it's over here on the left. Whatever, I can change the style. And even once I pick a container style, there's a heading style button that lets me say, you know what, I really like the heading to be at the bottom. And sure enough, now it says Boston down in the bottom center. So it's almost trivial to exercise that kind of control over what's going on with a container. Now let's talk about a list by comparison. I'm going to go to the next page in this diagram. A list is a cousin of a container. A list is a structured diagram element that keeps its contents in a specific sequence. So think of it just like the lists of to-do items you make. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that's your list. Let's look at this list. I'm going to start with a blank shape over here on the left. It's just a red rectangle. Watch what happens when I get to this list labeled all-time greats. Notice it lights up just like a container does. When I drop this element inside it, the list resizes to just enough to contain this item. If I next drag a green container, you'll notice a couple things happen. Not only does the boundary light up, but if I hover just a half second longer, you see that orange insertion bar. Let me zoom in on that. That shows me where the next element I'm dragging will be dropped and added to the list. If I want it at the top of the list, all I have to do is move it up. So let's do that. Let's position it here instead. And notice now it's green-red. If I want the yellow one in between, well, I just need to drop it right there in between. The structure of the list shape enforces that things are put into whatever sequence I request. Now, what's interesting, we can't see it with these shapes, but each of these shapes actually knows not only that it's in a list, but it also knows what order it's in that list. Let's take a look at that. I'm going to Control-Z a couple of times just to move those shapes out. Now, here are some shapes where I've done something a little bit different. I've added text. I've actually inserted a field. Let's look at that. Go to the Insert menu, choose Field. And what I've inserted that will be displayed as text on the shape is a formula that says list order, left parenthesis, right parenthesis. That's a special formula that is part of these structured diagram elements that says, give me my position in the list. Why do these shapes, let's cancel that, why do these shapes show -1 at the moment? Because the way that list order formula works, if I'm not in a list, the value of that list order function is -1. Let's see what happens when I drag. Let's take this red rectangle and drop it in the list. Now it shows 1. Let's drag the green one and drop it somewhere. How about we'll put it below this time, 2. Let's insert the yellow one in between. Yellow becomes two, green automatically becomes three because it's displaying its order in the list. Let's put the orange one at the very top. It's one out one, and we'll drop this one in between the yellow and the green. The list knows what's in it, what it contains, and the order in which those shapes are contained, and each shape knows its position in the list. So what? Well, let's get to that. Let me undo a couple of times, and by the way, I'll show you the other formula that I've embedded in these shapes in just a second, but what now let's talk about a practical application. I've got a list. I'm trying to create a list of my all-time favorite jazz musicians. So I've got the list in the center of the screen, and I've got some of my favorite musicians on the right side of the screen. Dave Brubeck, Ella Fitzgerald, Wynton Marsalis, and so forth. Let's drag them into this list and see what happens. All we see at the moment is the name. So let's put Ella Fitzgerald in. She's always near the top of any list. How about Wynton Marsalis? Yeah, well, he's sort of a Johnny-come-lately compared to Ella Fitzgerald. Let's put him number two. By doing that, physically just dropping him in that position, he becomes number two on the list. Louis Armstrong, ooh, tough call. He's got to be somewhere up there. I don't know, before, after Ella. They did so many wonderful duets, I should probably find a way to make them equal in the list. But let's drop him in right after Ella, and Louis Armstrong becomes number two. John Pizzarelli, let's put him down at the bottom of the list for the moment. And Dave Brubeck, my all-time musical hero, even above Ella Fitzgerald in this case, so I'll drop him in right there, and he becomes number one. Now, how is it that these shapes look like this outside the list, but look like this inside the list? It's just another formula. So now we're going to use the shape sheet knowledge that we gained back in Module 1, and let's take a look at what's inside this particular shape. I'm going to right-click on it, choose Show Shape Sheet, and in the shape sheet, you'll see a formula called List Position and one called, a cell called User Position Display. We didn't talk about user cells much before, but they are kind of what the name suggests. Those are a type of cell in the shape sheet that I can make do whatever I want them to do. I can name them as I choose. I can put whatever kinds of data values I want into them. What I've done is embed a formula that draws on what we've learned about lists so far, and I'm going to use that formula as the field that displays text on top of the shape. So let's look at this particular formula, and what we see is an if statement. The beginning says, if the list order, that is, if the position of this shape in the list equals minus one, we've already learned that that means it's not in a list. So if it's not in a list, then put quote, nothing quote. That is, there's just two quotes next to each other. That's empty text, if you will. So what we're going to display is nothing if the shape is not in a list. However, if it is in a list, we're going to display something called user.listPosition. And oops, that's this formula just above. I'm not very, very good at drawing with my finger here, so let's abandon that notion. Let me zoom in once more here. So we have a reference to the formula in the preceding position. And that one merely says, if I'm in a list, don't do anything. If I'm not in a list, don't do anything. If I am in a list, show my list position. Basically, all we've done is combine two things here. We've combined knowledge about position with text. And we get that result by looking at this Brubeck shape. If we look at insert field, we can see that we're taking advantage of the user position display cell in the shape sheet, plus a shape data field that is the name of the musician. So a little bit of list knowledge, a little bit of data knowledge, combining the two lets me make a shape that behaves exactly like what you've seen. If I'm in a list, I don't display anything other than a bit of data. If I'm not in the list, I don't display anything but a bit of data. If I am in the list, I show where I am in the list.
So Scott, that's great, but you know, as I know, under the Insert tab, there is no button Create a List. So could you show us how to create the list?
I think that's a great idea, and I'll show you how easy it is. It's non-intuitive, but it's easy once you've been shown a couple of tips. So let's do that. I'm going to start with nothing more than a rectangle. I'm going to click the rectangle tool here and take a rectangle. Let's go back and get the pointer tool again. Let's take this Dave Brubeck shape and let's drop it on top of the rectangle. Well, basically, it's behind the rectangle because Dave Brubeck was on the page first. This rectangle came along later, and there's that order. New shapes are always on the top, older shapes are behind. So let's do something about that. We really didn't accomplish anything by dropping it on top of the rectangle. That's because this rectangle is indeed not a list yet, but let's make it one. Right-click. I'll show you how ridiculously easy it is when you know the trick. I'm going to add, the key is in the user section of the shape sheet. There are some special cell names that Microsoft created when they invented this notion of structured diagrams. In order to use them, I have to have a user section. To create it, we just do this. Right-click anywhere inside the shape sheet, choose Insert Section, and put a check mark next to User-Defined Cells. So all I'm telling Visio is I want to add a section to the shape sheet for this shape, and it's the user section. So I've got this row here. Rather than mistake or risk making a mistake in the typing, I will copy this and paste it and then show you exactly what I've done. This is one of those magical names that was defined by Microsoft. It's called MSV, as in Microsoft Visio, MSV structure type. That's the name that must be in that cell in order to do this magic of turning this thing into a list. The only other thing you need to do is be able to spell the word list, like this. So we're going to go into the value part of the cell, quote, L-I-S-T, quote, enter. So I have put a special name, MSV structure type, and I've put a particular value, list. Let's close the shape sheet. And now let's take Dave Brubeck. And look at that. It lights up just like a list. Now, Dave Brubeck is still behind because the list came along later. Let's fix that. Let's take this list and let's send it to the back. So let's send it back. And now when we drop Dave Brubeck on, hey, Dave's number one in our fancy rectangle that wasn't anything other than a rectangle mere minutes ago. Let's drop Wynton Marsalis in. It behaves exactly the same way. It doesn't have a fancy border around it. It doesn't have a heading on the top. We're going to actually build a pretty fancy list a little bit later on that will have some of those other attributes. But for right now, simple matter of adding a cell in this special section of the shape sheet, and we turned a rectangle into a list. So there's the answer to your question. It's actually pretty easy. Let me talk next about where you can find lists and containers in Visio. What we've got is a bunch of templates that contain predefined lists in Visio and containers as well. So let's go back to Visio and let's take a couple of these as an example. File, new, and let's open a, swim lane diagram, that's what I'm looking for. Let's go to categories and we'll go to flowchart and we'll go to cross-functionals flowchart, which is the fancy name for a swim lane diagram. You've probably seen swim lane diagrams many times, probably have created them. If you've done that in Visio 2010 or 2013, you were actually using lists, whether you knew it or not, and containers both, because the swim lane structure is a list, and each swim lane is a container. Let's prove that. Here's this list. It has a header. If I type name, it appears in the prescribed place. Whoever designed this structure said the heading for this swim lane diagram will go in the top left. And sure enough, when I start typing, that's what happens. In this case, let's zoom in here on the right end of this swim lane. Here's a swim lane that says function at the moment. Let's just say we're going to create a flowchart that has information about sales and marketing. So I just selected that flowchart, started typing, and the word sales automatically appears in the header portion of that swim lane. Similarly, marketing. And, bad typing notwithstanding, it says marketing, and we're all set. We've got two swim lanes. Now, how else can I prove that this overall structure is a list? One way I can is by dragging another element into it. Here's a new swim lane, and if I pause just for a second, you'll see the orange insertion bar appear above or below. So I can add a new swim lane very easily. And another way to tell is this. I didn't show you this on my musician lists, but there's this special little thing that happens if you hover near the boundary between two elements in a list, it will let you insert as well. So one click on that little blue triangle, and it inserted a swim lane for me. other evidence that these things are lists and containers. If I bring a process shape onto the page, let's deselect everything. I drag a process shape in. Notice the swim lane lights up. That's the same marking we saw for containers and lists in my simple examples. Let's drop this one in the sales, and let's use the auto connect feature to add a decision diamond, and I'll add another process shape. So now I've got some stuff in swim lanes. Let me show you further evidence that these are containers, and that further proof of something I told you but didn't demonstrate before, and that is objects in containers and lists know where they're contained. Look at this shape right here that's highlighted, and look at its shape data. Notice next to the word function it says marketing. If I drag that shape into the sales swim lane, function is now sales. So that shape knows it's contained in a swim lane, and it's actually picking up a shape data value from the swim lane itself, namely the header of that lane. So here's part of the value of this structure that you can add to your diagrams is things know where they live. It might be a room in a house. It might be a flowchart symbol in a swim lane. Just use your imagination. Anything that you can picture wanting to have inside a container or a list, you can do that, and it can know that it's there, and the list or container knows what it contains.
Money in the bank.
That's a good idea. I wish I could draw money into my bank. That would be a very good thing. Just one or two other very quick examples. There are wireframe diagrams. I'm not going to show you that one. I'm actually going to open a quick diagram and show you something related to data graphics that is implemented using diagrams like this. Let's see. I've got some Visio product examples here. Let's go to the data graphics page. This is a process diagram. It has a data graphic applied to it that turns the shapes different colors based on status of the task, and there are little flags that demonstrate risk values. Higher risks are red and orange, lower risks are blue and green. Today is not the time when we're going to go into data graphics and how to create them. That's a topic for the future, for sure, and what you can do with some of the data behind these shapes. But what I want to do is show you this particular aspect of data graphics. Having these nice colors is a good thing. Remembering what those colors are is not my strong suit. So I don't remember what an orange shape versus a green shape versus a blue shape is, but Visio solves that problem for me. I click on the Data tab, which is visible, by the way, if you have Visio Professional, but not if you have Visio Standard. And I click Data Graphics, and I choose my pre-designed data graphic. That's how we applied the data graphic. What I want to do now is I want to click this button that says Insert Legend. Visio offers me a choice of horizontal or vertical. I'll choose vertical, and let's zoom in on this guy over here. This is actually a structure built around containers and lists. Here's an element in a list. This is the candidate. Let's zoom in a little bit further here. So the candidate shape is red. So now I can see, if I go back to my flowchart, let's go to full screen view here, anything that's red is done by the candidate. Anything that's green is done by the HR admin, and so forth. So I have a color legend. I can see that my risks are color-coded as well. Just to prove that this is a list with structure to it, I can drag candidate down below. So if I want to change the sequence in which this legend appears, done. If I want to provide better labels on these little red, green, orange flags and so forth, red is high risk, so let's just put the word high. This is text as part of an element in a list. Maybe this is medium high, and this one is medium, and so forth. So you can see that this is a list structure. If risks are more important to me, I actually can drag the whole risk container and drop it above owner and change the order of those elements within the parent list. So this is nested lists and containers that Visio employs in building this legend for you. But it doesn't stop when Visio builds it. You have the option to make it your own. So that's a couple of examples about how Visio uses containers and lists. Poke around. There are more, not just wireframes that I mentioned but didn't show you. There are other examples as well. Let's now move on to the fun part of this section. This is the part of this module in which we're actually going to do some really cool things. I'm going to show you a couple of finished products first, and then we'll actually create something that's pretty different than what you might have created in Visio in the past. To do this, we're going to close this diagram and let's open, actually let's close this one as well. We no longer need our swim lane and we don't need my musician list either. Let's click File and I will open these two diagrams, this theater seating chart. And I will open, let's talk about this one first. Now, I'm involved with a couple of community theater groups back in the Boston area, and one of the things that I often end up doing is managing the house. So I'm getting the ushers, and we're, you know, seating people, seating patrons, and that sort of thing. You're dealing with all the issues that relate to who belongs in this seat versus that seat. One of the things that some of the venues we use don't have is a good and accurate seating chart. So I thought, after I saw containers and lists in Visio 2010 a few years back, I thought, you know, these things can number themselves. We ought to be able to figure out a way to make Visio do seating charts for me. So let's look. Here is a fictitious theater. It happens to resemble one in which we've performed a fair number of times. There's a center orchestra section here. There's an orchestra left section, orchestra right. There's a small balcony section in the back. What about this? Let's zoom in here and let's take a look at some of the behaviors that are in this. What we've got at the outside edge here is the orchestra center. That's a list that expects to have elements in it. And those elements in this case happen to be rows. You can see that row A is numbered and the seats are numbered as well. That's because the row is not just a row, it's actually a container that has a list embedded in it. And inside that inner list are seats. And notice that they're numbered. Well, let's see what happens if we take row A. We know things in lists pick up numbers automatically. So let's take row A and drag it after row B and see what happens. Row A is now row B, and row B is now row A. It's a little less obvious in this example than my musician example, but the same thing is going on. If I take seat 102 and reposition it over here, everything gets renumbered automatically. Whoops, I dropped it in the wrong place. That's user error. Let's undo. Let's take B101 here, and let's drop it over here. And all the seats renumber automatically. It's not magic, and there's actually zero programming going involved here. I didn't write any code at all. All I did was build some shapesheet formula and embed lists and structure and list containers in a structured way. It's actually a little bit cooler. There's more to this. Let me just show you a couple of other features.
Yeah, that was my question about the code, because I'm really surprised. It looks like magic for many of our users.
And this, you trust me, you can do this yourself. It took me a while to do this. This was not a simple thing, as you might imagine. There's a fair bit of structure to it. But nevertheless, it is no programming required.
Yeah, I have a full night to practice.
Yes, that's right. Let me go back and just show you a couple of other things that this particular diagram does. If I select that same center section, notice right now the seat numbers start on the right and move to the left. What if you happen to move into a theater where the seats are numbered the opposite way? Well, what I did was add shape data to the section that says number from left to right, from left or right. Right now it's set to right. Watch this. If I change it to left, boom. Not only that row, but every other row in every section of that entire section is automatically numbered the other way. What if we pull out row A and B because we're expanding the orchestra pit for this particular performance? So the first row of the theater that we can sell is row C. Change that parameter, and now we have C, D, E, and so forth. So it's simple to be able to make these kinds of changes if you've built the formula. Similarly, in many theaters, the seats in the wings sections are numbered sometimes odd on one side of the theater, even on the other side. So I've got parameters for that too. So you notice when I select orchestra right, we do have first seat is number one, and the seat increment is two. If I change the seat increment back to one, then we get one, two, three. The wrong one selected here? Let's do that one more time. Something broke. Well, that happens. But normally, what you would have seen is that it would change the seat numbering for that section without any problem. But again, just another example. It's a way that you might think about relationships among objects in a diagram, how they're related to each other, how they're related to other larger elements of the diagram, in this case, the sections of the orchestra seating, and take advantage of Visio to do some of the heavy lifting for you. I could have numbered every one of these seats manually, but boy, I'll tell you, I don't want to do that. Not more than once.
And it could be useful for vending machines or retail chains or any stores where you have two dimensions, basically, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's true. I mean, it's only limited by your imagination, really. No question about that. You've got the facility here. Now that you know a little bit more about how to use it, it's great.
And no code behind.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And that's one of the best things. You do not have to be a programmer to do this. You have to be a bit techie, no question about it, because some of these formulae get a little bit of interesting, shall we say, when you're relating seats to rows and sections. If you want to know more about this particular diagram, by the way, I'm happy to provide this and copies of any of the sample diagrams I've used in any of the three modules today. Scott@visiostepbystep.com. Just send me an email and I'll be happy to respond with the samples. This particular diagram on another page does have the building blocks. So if you want to experiment with dropping seats into actually, let's zoom in on that part of the diagram. You'll notice that seats don't have numbers until they're inside the structure, just as Brubeck didn't have a one in front of him until I put him number one on the list. Gotta drop this in the right place here. I seem to be having mouse issues today, but no problem. You get the concept. If I drop a row into the section, the row does not have any designation on it until it knows where it is, until it's now learned that it's row A because it's number one on the list. The first page in this diagram is an overview of how this was all put together. So if you want to know more about what's nested inside what in order to make this work, here you see the different lists and containers that are part of it, as well as some detailed instructions and design notes and sundry other things. So it's an interesting example. You may not have anything to do with theater ever in your life, not a problem, but you still may learn something from this example. I'm going to open another diagram now, and this will be our final diagram, and one that we're going to spend some time working with here in order to see a little bit more about what's possible. In this particular case, I'm going to drag a shape in from the stencil. Now, a quick preface before I show you what I'm about to show you. This comes from a client project that I've been working on in the last year, a global medical device manufacturer that wanted to add some structure to their process diagrams. And they came to me and said, hey, here's what we're doing now. We don't have much control over the data in the diagrams. We need to do some other stuff. One of the things they wanted to be able to do was to have a selection of text boxes, each of which had its own hyperlink, and be able to have them move around together. So they wanted to be able to add hyperlinks to individual elements of text, but have them be united in some way. So essentially, they're saying, in other words, help me build structure into this particular part of my diagram. Now, some of the challenges they faced are this. If we go back and look, if I just thought, okay, well, yeah, we could do that. We could create text boxes, sure. Here's a text box, and I can type text in it, and that's good. And I could create another text box, and I could add text to it. If I wanted to format that text, maybe I've got multiple lines here. If I want to format that text and they wanted them to be bullet lists, so let's add bullets. Well, text formatting or formatting of text in text boxes, let me just expand the box, tends to apply to everything in the box. So I can't just put bullets on two items and have other elements of text in that same box that are unbulleted. Similarly, if I change the text color, it applies to the whole text shape. If I add a hyperlink, it's added to the entire shape. And while I can add multiple hyperlinks to any one shape, I didn't show you that before, but it's very possible. What they wanted to do is have somebody be able to click on the second bullet item, and that be one hyperlink, the third bullet item be a different hyperlink, and so forth. None of that was possible, or is possible, with a standard text box, or even a set of text boxes that are hooked together in ordinary pre-container and list ways. So what did we do? This is what the end result looked like. I'm dragging an info shape onto the page, and it comes pre-filled with two text boxes. And each of those text boxes can contain text. And if I click on one, and let's type A and B, and now I've got two text boxes. If I move the header, which, by the way, you'll notice is a graphical header, it's a little icon, everything goes with it. If I add a hyperlink, Control K, and let's do Microsoft.com, and click OK, that hyperlink is on the A text, not on the B text. So if I look here, we've got that hyperlink, and zoom in a little bit more. We should be able to follow that hyperlink. Again, I'm having mouse control issues here. Let's right-click and follow that hyperlink. Where's my hyperlink? Sorry about that, folks. Let's do this. Oh, you know what? Silly me. I didn't actually create a full-fledged hyperlink. All I did was type www. Visio actually isn't quite that smart. Now it's added the HTTP. Let's see whether that is what makes the difference. Should be that we can follow that hyperlink now. Okay, kids, this is a case where you're going to have to trust me. This really does work. I'm not sure what I just did wrong, but the fact of the matter is that I can add a hyperlink to each of these text elements within this shape.
Now, it always happens when you have a live demo.
Oh, absolutely. Of course it does. That's
that's the beauty of the live demos.
The name of the game. let me prove a little bit more about the list structure that this is. Notice that with my cursor positioned here, there's that orange insertion bar, and if I click, it inserts another one of those text shapes. Or if I go to the info shape text box in my stencil, I can drag one in and I can position it wherever I'd like, again using that orange insertion bar. Now, this particular shape actually has a whole lot more attributes than what I've than just being a list. They not only wanted this little icon as the list header, but they wanted the icon to be selectable. So part of what we built for them was this shape data that says, okay, you want a performance metric info box, and the graphic becomes that, or a regulation, or a list of things that's time dependent. So we've got these different kinds of data choices I make that affect the presentation of the header. And also, each of these text boxes inside here is actually pretty smart. So if it's a data item that has no link, link type none, then I can add custom text to it. And here's a case where we designed this so they can either add the text in the shape data window, or they can type directly on the shapes, as you saw me doing a moment ago. But if I have a shape and I choose other than link type, QSD, for example, then notice different shape data fields appear. So none has just a field called custom text. QSD and others have other fields. And these fields not only have specific names and additional fields appear, but each of these fields is, the values of the fields are formatted in specific prescribed ways by the customer. So if I type a number here now, I've got a QSD 12345. As soon as I tab into the next field, notice the QSD appears underlined. That's actually because a hyperlink was automatically added to it based on the value that I typed. When I type a title for this document, it appears after the number and in italicized text. The custom text appears, the custom text appears after the other elements. Once again, my mouse flipped unexpectedly here, and I seem to have an unexpected result. Well, that's the idea. I can do a lot of things with the data that we'll be taking a look at in other modules. I can one data value can change what appears in the shape data window. A data value can affect formatting. All of it's done through that magic of the shape sheet that we looked at in module one, and we've touched on a couple of times now already here. Let's do something. Let's actually create a list very similar to this one. It won't be quite as fancy. It won't have data values that change other things, but I want to create a list that has a graphical header, not just text, and that accepts text values that are placed into it. So let's scroll down here, and let's do some simple first steps. Let's take a circle. And by the way, when you use the ellipse tool from the drop-down here of drawing tools, if you simply select it and then drag with your cursor, select it and drag with your cursor, you get an ellipse that will vary in size. One trick, Well, notice when I get in certain places, a diagonal dashed line appears. That's my indication that this is a circle, not an ellipse. When I use the rectangle tool, that dashed diagonal line tells me I'm now drawing a square rather than a rectangle. So that's one way. Another trick is that if you hold down the shift key, with this tool, the only thing you can draw is circles. Similarly, with the rectangle tool, if you hold down the shift key while you're dragging, the only thing you can draw are squares. So I want a circle. I want it to be about half an inch in diameter. I'm looking in the lower left of the drawing window, and you see the size, the width and the height there varying. I'm just going to make it close. We'll actually make it exactly half an inch in just a moment. Next, I want to apply a fill color, and let's just pick one. How about sort of that violet shade? Next thing I want is a rectangle. So let's draw a rectangle. And this will be my text box. So I'm going to make this be my list that will contain text boxes, I should say. Let's also apply a fill color to this one. And we'll go with a complementary shade in the lavender family there. Now, here's where some of the geek stuff enters the picture. Now we need to combine a lot of the things we've learned so far about the shape sheet and containers and lists all together in order to make a list that has a circle as the header and that will allow me to drop text boxes into it. To do that, we're going to go back and let's start this way. I'm going to go to the rectangle, which is selected now, right-click and choose Show Shape Sheet, because the first thing we need to do is make this rectangle into a list, as you saw me do once a moment ago. Quick aside, you'll notice with normally in the past when I've opened the shape sheet window, it's opened below the drawing window. This time it happened to open on top of it. Two very handy keyboard shortcuts that are well worth knowing anytime you're managing windows within Visio. Shift F7 and Control Shift F7. Here's the difference. If I select the drawing window and type Shift F7, then all of the windows that are open appear side by side. If I type Control Shift F7, then they appear vertically arranged. In my case, I really only want two windows, so I'm going to close the theater seating chart, because we're finished with that, and that leaves me with what I actually want, which is my circle and rectangle drawing window at the top of the die, in the upper half, and the shape sheet window in the lower half. So now let's quickly replicate the steps I used earlier. I'm going to insert a section, specifically the user-defined cells section. I'm going to go back to my notepad here and copy the requisite text so I make sure to get it exactly right. We'll type quote L-I-S-T list and enter, and now our rectangle is a list. And we could prove that by dragging a shape into it and seeing the highlight, but that's we've already seen that. I'm going to do something else, and I'm not going to explain a lot about this particular attribute, but there is in this section of the shape sheet called Protection a cell called Lock Calc WH. That locks the recalculation of the width and height of this shape as other aspects of the shape change. And that's important in this case for a list, because a list has its own ideas about how big or small it should be. Namely, as we've seen, when you drag things into a list, the list resizes itself to contain the elements in the list. So I don't want Visio to interfere with that. That's why I'm setting this particular value. So to do it, all I need to do is change the 0 that's there to a 1. That says basically false true or on off, as you choose to look at it. So now I've set those two data attributes. The next thing I'm going to do, let's close the shape sheet. Next thing I'm going to do is to go to the Developer tab, and here's another use for the Developer tab. There's a Group button here, and in this case, I don't want to choose Group, which I also could have done by right-clicking on this object. I'm going to go down to the bottom. I don't want to just group this shape with something else. I actually want to convert this shape to a group. So I'm going to select that, and now this rectangle is not only a list, but it's a group. And those are two attributes that are going to become increasingly important as we finish in the last couple of moments here. Next thing I'm going to do is to select the circle, and I'm going to turn it into a list heading. How do you do that? Right-click, Show Shape Sheet. There's no user cells section yet, so let's insert one. In this case, I'm going to type or paste exactly the same value here, MSV structure type, and you don't need a master's degree in rocket science to figure out that what you might want to type is the word heading in between the quotes. So instead of typing list, we're going to type heading. I don't believe this is case sensitive, but you know, I've never done it any other way than with a capital H, so I'm just going to do that. And so now this simple little circle has become a heading. It's not part of a list or a container yet, but it can be, and that's the important part. There's one other value I want to add. Right click, and this time I don't want to insert a whole new section. I want to insert one more row, and this row has a somewhat arcane name also, but it's a useful one. Actually, it's this one that I want. This particular one tells Visio when this thing becomes a heading, a container heading, and I set this value to bottom, just the word bottom, B-O-T-T-O-M. So this is what it looks like now. This cell is called container heading edge. That tells Visio when this thing becomes part of a container, this heading will have the container, the main part of the container, at its bottom, on the bottom. So I'm basically saying heading's going to go here, and the list itself will go below it. I could say it's on the side or the top or the bottom, wherever I want to put it. I want it to be at the bottom. So that's the simple work of turning this thing into a shape that can become a heading. Now what I want to do is make that happen. So I'm going to select my group slash list, select the circle with a shift click so that I now have both selected. Back to the developer tab, back to the group button, and this time I don't want to group or ungroup or convert, I want to add, because I've got a group already, that's the rectangle, I want to add this circle to that group. So add to group, and now let's see how this behaves. What happens if I click and drag the circle? So let's select it. Well, you know what? As a matter of fact, when I click on the circle, the rectangle lights up. Why is that? Because that's the heading of my list. It's not positioned very nicely yet. We'll get to that in a second, but it is a list. I could drag text boxes and drop them in it. It lights up nicely. All that stuff's good. So let's just do a couple of last quick touches here and make this look a little nicer. It would be kind of nice if the circle were centered and just butted right down against the top of the rectangle so that it looked nice. So let's do that. A couple more things you're going to learn about shape sheets and functions here. I'm going to right click, and by the way, when I click the first time, it selects the list. When I click the second time, it selects the heading of the list. I'm going to now right click on the circle, show shape sheet. I want this circle to always be the same size. Let's change the zoom setting a little bit so we can see both the circle and the rectangle. I want it to always be the same size, and I want it to be, as I said a moment ago, positioned in exactly the same place every time. To do that, I'm going to look at the shape transform section. This is where the width and the height are. We looked at width and height earlier in Module 1. What I want to do is put a special formula here, a special function that is the word guard and 0.5. That says to Visio, the width of this shape should always be 0.5. And as you saw, if you watched Module 1, the guard function disallows the user from manually changing the width of this shape in the user interface. So I'm going to do that for both the width and the height. And it's yes, error in formula. That's because I didn't spell it properly. So let's try that again. That should be guard, G-A-U-R-D, 0.5. Yes, must be close to the end of the day here. Wow, okay. Here's another thing to know. Visio shape sheets do have type ahead, even better. Type GU and it says, hey, there's a function called guard. You want that? Tab key says, yep, you bet I do. Now 0.5. That's what I should have done to start with. Let's copy that formula and paste it into the height because I want this to be a circle that is exactly half an inch in each direction. So far, so good. Introduce you now to a couple of other cells that are here in this shape transform section. This is a cell called pin X and pin Y. Best way to think about the pin cells is if you had a piece of paper cut in a circle or a rectangle or any other shape and you wanted to stick it on the wall and you put a pin in it, the pin X and Y location is the center of rotation. So in the center of this circle, I want the center of the circle to be in a specific place. So let's see how we tell Visio what that place should be. In the case of the X dimension, that is left to right, I want this shape to always be exactly halfway left to right. Right now, it's this formula. Let me zoom in. This formula says sheet.197 exclamation point. Without going into too much detail, what that means is that is a reference to the parent. So this shape is part of something bigger, the list that we've built. So what I want is the circle to always be halfway left to right within the list structure. Even if the list gets bigger, I want the shape to always, the circle to always be in the same place. So let's do that. So sheet177.width.4141, that just happens to be where I randomly placed it. So let's change that to 0.5. That's halfway. So 0.5, watch the circle will jump. When I press the Enter key right now, circle's now exactly halfway. And I also said I wanted it to be butted at the top of the shape. So here's where some of that high school geometry that you thought you'd never use again comes into play. What I need to think about is I want this to be at the top of the circle plus, I want pin X, that is, and pin Y, rather, more specifically, to be at the top of the rectangle plus half the height of the circle, because that's the middle of the circle and where it should be. So what I want is the height of the parent shape, sheet 177, exclamation point height, plus half of the height of this shape, which is in the height cell, H-E-I-G-H-T, times 0.5, whoops, times 0.5. And there we go. So now the circle is halfway left to right and sitting right on top of this list. And now we're almost done. We've got this thing that looks like what we want it to look like. We can make a text box, and let's just create one here. We'll call this one A, and let's make a couple of duplicates. I'm just typing Control D, as in duplicate. While we're here, let's change this one to B and this one to C. And do we truly have a list that behaves the way we want it to? The answer is yes, we do. I'm going to drag shape B into the list, and it appears. Notice the list changed width to accommodate the width of the shape we dropped in it. The circle stayed right where we asked it to. I'd put A after B, and I put C at the top. I'm just creating my little reverse alphabetical list here, and everything is cool. Now, there are some other, many other, really interesting things that you can do with lists and containers. You can actually have categories of shapes so that you can allow certain shapes to be dropped into a container or a list, but other shapes are not allowed to be dropped in. The info shape, I didn't show you that property, but it was like that. If I tried to drag any old text box into it, wouldn't have worked because it was set to only allow certain kinds of shapes that are categorized in certain ways. How do you categorize them? It's another one of those special MSV user cell settings.
Scott, but can we use images, for example, instead of just a shape, so for an icon or for a header?
Sure. And in fact, you saw that that possibility up here with the info shape. This is a simple little icon, and we turned it into the header rather than just a generic circle. So absolutely, if you want your company logo to be the header of the list shape that you want to create, go for it. Not a problem at all.
Yeah, that's what I asked. Because some companies, they really would like to have their logos or some attributes attached to the diagrams sometimes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Perfectly reasonable thing to want to do, perfectly possible to do.
Great.
So that wraps up this session. I hope you've gotten some better ideas now about, Alex's question at the beginning about, well, you know, I see that containers and lists exist, but so what? I hope you now have a much better idea about so what. What I've shown you is that you can find lists and containers in Visio templates. You'll find swim lane diagrams and wireframes and sundry other types of Visio templates that already contain lists and containers. You'll find that you can build your own. In the case of containers, it's very easy to add them just by clicking Insert Container from a menu. Can't do that with lists, but by adding one cell in the user section of a shape sheet, you can turn any shape into a list. And with a little bit more knowledge like this, you'll find you can turn anything into a header, attach it to your list or container, and truly add structure that provides visual relationships as well as adding content relationships between shapes on the drawing page. If you want to know more, there are a number of very, very good blog posts about containers and lists that date back to their introduction in Visio 2010. If you have any problem finding them online, send me an email, scott@visiostepbystep.com, and I'll be happy to provide you links to all of the resources you'll need to finish off your containers and list design.
Thank you, Scott. So I'm becoming, you know, right now a fan of the containers and Lisp too. So I hope that our viewers too. So thank you for coming today.
Yeah,
it was
absolutely.
A great session, and I really enjoyed and learned a lot.
Good.
Anything else before we wrap up?
Just one or two last slides. Thank you for the segue. Just want to point out my books. I would be remiss if I didn't do that. Visio 2013 Step by Step is the one that we've been talking about mostly today, directly and indirectly. You will find information about many of the things I've talked about, not at quite the technical level that I've gone into today. This was definitely a deep dive into some of these topics. There is the book on Visio 2010 and the one on business intelligence with SharePoint that I mentioned. I've mentioned my email address verbally a couple of times, scott@visiostepbystep.com. Visiostepbystep.com is the website for my book, so if you're interested in more information, you can certainly find them at Amazon or all the usual places or at my website. And I do monitor the Twitter, monitor the Visio keyword on Twitter. So if you have questions, look for me at visprocess.com. And I'll be happy to help you in any way I can.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you,
Alex. It was a wonderful session.
Great.
Enjoy.
Take care.